Hello and welcome to OnFit Podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about the role of central banks in greening the financial system. This is Marcin Stepan from OnFit in London, and today we talk to Morgan Dupree, Head of the Secretariat for Central Banks and Supervisory Networks for Greening the Financial System, the NGFS, and Head of the Financial Regulation Policy at Banque de France, as well as Frank van Leeuwen, Senior Economist at the New Economics Foundation. Thank you for joining us today, and welcome. Perhaps to start things off, or a little bit of context, the NGFS is a coalition of the willing. This is a group of around 34 central banks and supervisors who aim to accelerate the work of central banks, supervisors on climate and environmental risk, and on scaling up green finance. It's a voluntary, consensus-based forum whose purpose is to share best practices, contribute to the development of climate and environment-related risk management in the financial sector, and mobilize mainstream finance to support the transition towards a sustainable economy. Yesterday, we had the first comprehensive report, which was a culmination of 16 months of hard labor. And this was spearheaded greatly by Morgan as head of the NGFS Secretariat, as well as Frank Elderson from the Dutch Central Bank and chair of the NGFS. Morgan, if I go perhaps straight to you, why is this report so important and what are some of the key takeaways?
Hi, thank you for having me. Well, I guess this report is very important because this is the first time that a number of key central banks agree and acknowledge that climate risk is a source of financial risk. This is something we already published and we already said in October last year, but this time we also bring up some recommendations that are actually that derive from this observation. So this report is basically the output of 15 months of hard work within the NGFS membership. And maybe to summarize what we've been doing, I think initially what we tried to do at the kickoff of the network was very much scoping work. At that time, we knew there was necessarily something for us to do, but we didn't necessarily see exactly what to do and how to do it. So the first part of the work was to do a stock-taking exercise. And we had identified at that time three main areas of interest to us. The first one was microprudential supervisory issues. So in other words, how can we measure and quantify the exposures of financial sector to climate risks? That was the first area. The second area was the macro financial impact of climate change. In other words, besides individual exposures of financial institutions, we should also think in terms of what are the contagion channels, what are the second round effects of climate change on the financial system and the economy as a whole. And the third area that we have investigated is how to scale up green finance, but from a central bank perspective. In other words, besides the risk aspect, there are certainly a number of actions that central banks could undertake. So what could they be? What are the conditions for these actions to be undertaken in a proper manner? So this is really the first things we've done, the scoping work and the stock-taking exercise. Based on this preliminary work and stock-taking exercise, we found out that throughout the NGFS membership, there were a number of best practices. And we are doing altogether already quite a number of things. And what we wanted to do is to reflect those best practices and put them together into a number of recommendations. We have six of them. I want to flag here that these recommendations are not binding, of course. We are not a standard setting body, but we believe those recommendations reflect best practices which are useful and could usefully be adopted by a number of central banks and supervisors, should they be within the NGFS or outside. So what are those six recommendations? Basically, four of them are addressed at central banks and supervisors, and two of them are addressed at, let's call it, policymakers at large. The four first set of recommendations are pretty logical and consistent in a way. They basically say, if we, as central bank, we believe that climate change is a source of financial risk, we should be consistent and we should integrate that in all the dimensions of our work. So basically, we should include that in our supervisory practices, in our financial stability monitoring. We should aim at also include that in our economic forecasting. And also, and this is the second recommendation, we should be consistent and also include that in our portfolio management. I can get back to that later if you want. The third recommendation has to do with the issue of data gaps. We realize that in order to be able to identify and quantify exposures, we needed to have a proper set of data. But not only financial data, we also needed climate data, agricultural data, weather data, any kind of other data that we do not necessarily find altogether. And this is a little bit the question we were raising. There's certainly a need for a repository where we could find all the relevant data that could help us conducting our risk analysis. This is the third recommendation. And the fourth one is pretty simple indeed. It is to say, look, it's a very complex issue. We are at the very beginning of the journey. We need to continue working on this. And it's important that we develop our capabilities, our resources, to be able to tackle the analytical challenge. So we call everyone, central bank supervisors, but also all the other stakeholders, to make sure they have the right resources and they interact properly with the academia in order to improve their analytical capability so that we can move forward. And to finish, I would also like to touch upon the two other recommendations, which are not addressed only at us, but also at policymakers at large. There are two of them. The first one is the need for a proper and consistent climate and environmental disclosure. Again, this is key. At some point, we realized that during the stock-taking exercise that if we were not in agreement with what we were observing and what we were publishing and disclosing, then it might be difficult to do any kind of comparison or to do any kind of proper risk analysis. So that was a prerequisite. We needed something that was consistent and as comprehensive as possible. And last but not least, we also need, of course, a proper taxonomy. In other words, we need to have a grammar. We need to understand what we need to observe. Should it be from a financing perspective or should it be from a risk perspective? In other words, if we want banks to give us information about their exposures, we need to know what they're exposed to. And currently, the national or European accounting systems are not designed in a way that allows us to do that. So this is the end of this first part. I just want to describe what we have in the report. I can get back to that later, but it's, of course, the beginning of the journey, not the end. The challenge now would be to make sure we can find a way to turn these recommendations into something more operational and concrete.
Thank you so much, Morgan, for certainly outlining these six very important policy recommendations. Frank, if I turn to you, you've been working on matters of green finance and monetary policy for quite some time, certainly a very respected analyst in this field. How important are these policy recommendations? How innovative would you say, and how important of a platform for the start of discussions on how does one green the financial system as such?
First of all, thanks for having me on this podcast today, and also congratulations to you, Morgan, and to everybody else at the NGFS for producing such an excellent report. I think for me, there is a list of great things this report does, but there's three things that I think we could definitely highlight. The first one is that the way they've managed to highlight the urgency of this situation and the dangers and the risks that climate change poses to the financial system. And in effect, the NGFS, the title of the report is a call to action. And I think that that's definitely very laudable on the part of the NGFS. They've recognized that there's been a lot of talk and a lot of discussion around the potential dangers of climate change to the financial system, and now it's time to start doing things. So I thought that was great. The second thing that I thought was really, really good about the report, it's very accessible. It's got lots of infographics backed by a lot of staff. And one of the great things that they did with this report was release it alongside an article in The Guardian, an op-ed by Mark Carney, Frank Elderton from the Dutch National Bank, and Jean-François Roy de Gaulliau from the Bank of France. And I think that really helped amplify the messages. As my feeling about the last NGFS report that came out in October that Morgan talked about already was that, quite disappointedly, and this wasn't the NGFS's fault, it wasn't really covered in the news. And then what you saw yesterday is that this generated massive coverage and then is creating ripple effects. And that's exactly what we want. The NGFS really deserves kudos for that. And then the third thing that really, really deserves attention is the recommendations themselves. I think they are designed to have impact, and they will. I think there are some things in there that I really think are great and that there's potential to build on. Obviously, the side that we've been working on at the New Economics Foundation is how central banks can start and financial supervisors can start thinking about integrating climate-related financial risks into their monetary policy operations. And I think that there was some allusion to this concept, and then they're looking to build off of that moving forward. And I think that's definitely a platform to begin with. And as Morgan said, this is the beginning of a conversation, not the end.
Thank you very much, Frank. Let's dive into some of these policy recommendations recommendations. Looking at the first one, Pri looks at how to integrate climate into financial stability monitoring and micro supervision. And the key phrase that that's related here is aspects around scenario analysis and aspects of stress testing. And the fact that the aims is to have a supervisor's handbook in dealing with matters of green. Morgan, what are some of the key considerations here that central banks need to adopt and perhaps go about? What is the thinking of some central banks when it looks at the scenario analysis, and what are some of the challenges?
Thank you, Frank, for your nice words. Indeed, we are very happy, and yesterday there was a conference in Paris as well with very good fireside chat between Mark Carney, Villarreal de Gallo, and Miguel Avendo. So we tried to orchestrate it a little bit, the release, in a way that we could have a bigger impact than in October. So just to answer your question, on page 26 of the report, you will see there is a table that is called Courses of Action, and it lists a number of steps that could be taken by supervisors to better measure and understand the exposures of their banking sector to climate risks. Being more specific in terms of scenario analysis, we understand that there is a need for market participants to have clarity on the transition scenario they need to use as an input for their analysis. We are aware of this. I guess in the report, we give some preliminary approaches to that, which we understand there is a need for something a bit more data-driven and also a bit more, how could I put it, normative in a way. The difficulty with this stress testing exercise is that it's not like any other stress test. The time horizon is different. You can't have a 1 year or 3 years time horizon. You need to go further than that, 20, 30 years. This is the first difficulty because usually our economic models do not go that far. Second problem is this issue of scenario, transition path scenarios. Which one do you want to select? We don't believe there is one single best scenario, but we may imagine that there could be value in having a handful of them, four or five of them, which could represent several possible paths that we could consider as more realistic or more legitimate than others. And then, of course, you also need another brick, which is the macro impact. And at this stage, we're not completely at a stage where we can bring those three bricks together. In terms of scenario analysis, the NGFS will continue working on this, and we really want to do two things in terms of deliverables. First, we would like to turn the first recommendation into some, how would I put it, handbook or manual, so that supervisors who want to know more will know more precisely what they can do. And in terms of scenario analysis, we want to keep working on this, and maybe in early 2020, come back and have this handful of transition path scenarios that we could recommend. This is the way forward on this topic.
So essentially, it's very much about trying to make sure that supervisors know what can be done with regards to the different scenario analysis and different forms of stress testing to be able to build up the right models.
We need to continue the work. At this stage, we don't have all the bits and pieces together.
Frank, from an observer's perspective, what are some of the key challenges here, and how could or how should the NGFS perhaps go about trying to find some of these solutions?
Well, I think, first of all, just to echo everything, I actually agree with most of what Morgan said. I cut out for a few minutes there, but from what I heard, I agree with it. I think there's a few things that we need to think about on the stress testing side, is like how we can start stress testing in a long-term kind of scenario. That's really important, how we get the balance right in terms of climate change and the tragedy of horizon that it presents, and how we can start thinking more about the long-term risks is something we need to think about moving forwards. The second thing, like already having with the caveat that I agree with everything that Morgan said, I do think it's also important to highlight that we can't measure everything, and there's an inherent uncertainty both with climate change and with how market players and policy actors will essentially behave and act. And that presents fundamental uncertainty into the system. And we need to start thinking about the types of measures that we take and the types of policies that we use within this context. So I really like the ideas of scenario analysis and stress testing, but I also think that we really need to leave some leeway, so to speak, so that we don't just fundamentally rely on measuring things all the time.
Completely right. There are a number of decisions which are indigenous inside the scenario analysis, in particular a decision from policymakers in terms of the impact on your projection and transition path. So you're right, there are a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainty, and the objective is really to narrow it down a little bit, but certainly not to move toward a situation where we could say with certainty, this is the right way to measure risks, this is the right transition path. I guess this is not really what we want to do and say.
One aspect that was mentioned before is quite significant. It's the question around integrating sustainability factors into portfolio management. Frank, if I turn to you first, I know you've written a fair amount on how central banks could perhaps green some of their portfolio. How do you see this recommendation coming into focus?
Well, I think it's very good. And it's like Morgan said, again, this is the beginning of a conversation. So, and hopefully definitely not the end. I think there are two different things going on here when we think about these things. The first one is the extent to which central banks can lead by example in terms of maybe disclosing some of the own risk in their own operations and their own funds, including their pension funds and reserves. And I think from my understanding, Banque de France is one of the leaders in this respect. Their pension fund is doing a great job of trying to lead with the TCFD. And then, well, the other one, which was big news for us yesterday, was Bank of England has suggested that it is going to basically do what the TCFD does and lead by example and walk the talk across its whole entire balance sheet and all of its operations. This was definitely not something that we were expecting. And I think that that's an excellent step in the right direction. And it's something that I really encourage all central banks to try and do. So then the other aspect of integrating climate related risks into monetary policy operations themselves, which includes integrating risk into climate related financial risks into collateral frameworks and into asset purchases. Again, I think that the report is kind of suggesting that we start thinking about this. Our view is that it might be a bit too soon to start thinking about giving green haircuts for, or a lower haircut for green loans and green assets. But what we could start doing is definitely start thinking about the really carbon intensive, risky assets that are included in central banks' collateral frameworks. Now, the issue here is that central banks often use the credit ratings provided by credit rating agencies. And we know that credit rating agencies aren't integrating climate-related financial risks into their frameworks just yet. They've acknowledged them, but they're not in there. So there is a misalignment, if you will, here. And I think it'd be great over the next few years, you know, or even in the shorter term, 6 months, to see how we can start integrating climate-related financial risks, especially on the really dirty, dangerous brown fossil fuel asset that are in the collateral frameworks of central banks.
Thank you. Morgan, the fact that central banks are approaching this topic of how they could potentially change their monetary policy operations with this regard seems to be a very important step.
I think, as Frank rightly says, there are some allusions to this in the report. We agreed we would explore the topic because it's clearly not completely mature in terms of reasoning and reflection around that. But we acknowledge two things. First, we may imagine that in a above 2 degrees world, you may have some macroeconomic impacts on inflation and ultimately on price stability, which could be quite material. And so I guess one way for us to tackle the topic is to say, look, while being completely and squarely within our price stability mandate, what is going to be the impact of climate change on price dynamics? Clearly, this is already something very interesting to look at and completely within our mandate. And the second way we could tackle the topic is if we say that climate risks are a source of financial risk, and if we ask banks to mitigate, to identify and mitigate that risk, then it is also a risk for us in our collateral policy. So I guess it's being just consistent and drawing the conclusions of our consistent approach. I also agree with Frank that we're not there yet for a number of reasons. It's difficult to turn precisely into risk metrics this approach, but I think there's certainly a need for us to think more about it and trying to come up with some ideas on those two aspects.
If we turn to another very important aspect that you both mentioned, is surrounding the aspect of taxonomy and essentially what kind of grammar do we need to have in order to make sure that everybody's speaking the same language when it comes down to matters of green, brown, and that you can have standardization in terms of policy. This aspect of taxonomy has been something that has been going on for quite a while. And perhaps it's also a question, to what extent should we be looking at having an international standard of taxonomy, or should there be a more regional way for taxonomy? Morgan, if I address this first to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, at the end of the day, what matters is that there is a taxonomy, that this taxonomy is transparent, it's published, it's granular enough for us to be able to do the risk analysis and for investors to know what they invest in. I don't know if one day we're going to have a globally harmonized taxonomy. It looks quite remote. But in any case, we need to have cross-references so that investors know the differences between the different definition of green and brown. So in my view, having as many taxonomies as possible when they exist, having a clear view of what's in there and possibly some cross-references, it would certainly already help quite a lot. Then, of course, it's not up to central banks to do that, but I guess it is something we would need. And for me, having this more comparable approach to taxonomies would already be a progress.
Frank, if I turn to you, the importance of taxonomy, as Morgan has alluded, is certainly key, and having as many taxonomies perhaps is also useful here. What's your take?
When I think about taxonomies, the first thing that comes to mind is, and where the debate is going, is there's a lot of discussion about having a green taxonomy. My first view is what we need, first of all, is a brown taxonomy. I think that's the more important side and links to kind of one of the things that I'm very passionate about is we often, there's a lot of times talking about how we finance green things, and I understand that, but the most important thing to me is in terms of an urgency question is how do we stop the brown thing? And that's very much why I think that we need to make sure that there's a balance on both a brown and green taxonomy and that they're both included. Having said that, I think that even when it comes to taxonomies, I think we need them. I think that there's also some very clear things that we know are essentially environmentally damaging and not socially conducive or productive types of activities. We know that there are extreme fossil fuel assets out there and extreme carbon intensive assets out there, and they might not yet have a tag, but we can start thinking about them already. And so the only thing about the taxonomy debate that sometimes I'm not alone in this, I think, is that I just don't want us to end up debating for 5 or 10 years what a taxonomy looks like, and then in the process nothing actually ends up getting done for the next 5 or 10 years. So that's my only kind of caveat when I think about taxonomies. I think they're really necessary. I think as a policy maker and somebody who's responsible for implementing policy, as in Morgan's case, you really want to have a taxonomy, and I really sympathize.
Morgan, looking at these policy recommendations, how would you like investors, asset managers, asset owners to look at this report? What would you like them to take away from it, and what would you like their response to be?
I guess this is something we said in the executive summary of the report. We said that we're not so sure today, we're not completely convinced that the market prices properly climate risks in its asset valuation. And we believe at some point there is a need for the market to price that, for market discipline to play its role. And to do that, it takes a number of preconditions, particular taxonomy, appropriate and consistent disclosure. And if we have this, and on the other side, supervisors and central banks are doing the job, then at the end of the day, we hope market discipline could play and this climate risk could be priced by the market. This is really my main message to them.
Frank, if I turn to you, how do you think governments should respond to this NGVS report? What are some perhaps key takeaways that politicians should be able to utilize with this?
The first thing, again, to say is I think that the role and place for government is to lead the way in the fight against climate change and in implementing our commitments towards the Paris Climate Agreement. Nevertheless, I do think there are things that central banks can do. And I think that there's a lot of room and scope within the mandates of central banks to act themselves. But I think policymakers should really read this report across the board. I think that they should be extremely concerned and alarmed by it. I think one of the issues fundamentally to them, and this is highlighted in the report, which is the longer that it takes for government to actively respond to climate change, the bigger danger you both put our planet and the financial system within it in danger. The fiscal risks and the transition risks start to increase exponentially the longer it takes for policymakers to take action. So if anything, this message is a call for action to central banks, but it should be one to policymakers as well. I think that they really need to realize that we need a good gradual, smooth, just transition to a green, lower carbon economy for things to work, and essentially a poorly or an abrupt, too sudden, too late, mismanaged transition is not only going to be dangerous for the climate, but the financial system might even crash before that happens. We manage to make the transition if it's done in a poorly or in a too late fashion. So I think that would be my message to policymakers as an outcome from this report.
Great. Thank you for joining us. It's been great to speak to you on the NGFS report outlook, looking at what some of the central banks and supervisors can do when it comes down to massive greening the financial system. Some of the key recommendations that we discussed include the integrating climate-related risks into financial stability reporting, integrating the sustainability factors into portfolio management, and issues around taxonomy. Next week's podcast examines modern monetary theory and the impact on public policy. This will be available on the OnFIF channel on Tuesday, so you can download it once it has been podcast or subscribe to our channel. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.